All right, we'll keep things going, try to stay on schedule as best as possible. Our next presenter has been with us the past couple of years. Last year he wasn't able to make it but sent a video, and I'm told by the producers that, you know, follow his weather advice that he was spot on with it. So we're going to bring Brian back up here to give us the forecast and tell us what 2020 has in store for us, and he's going to enlighten us based on what he sees in his crystal ball. So come on up, Brian.
Good afternoon. How's everybody doing? We good? It's pretty tough to follow something like that. It means I can only go anywhere but down from that, right, Cam? Spot on? Yeah, okay. I forget how many years that I've been down here, but I got hooked up with Rick Ellison, you know, a few years back up in Amarillo, and he's asked me to come down here a few years for you guys, and it's always a pleasure to be here in Lubbock, Texas. I do a lot of work in Texas in general, in terms of weather outreach and weather consulting and whatnot. So my goal whenever I get to the same audience or a new audience or whatever is to show you some things that maybe you haven't seen before in terms of putting in your risk management toolbox as a producer so you can use going forward to better your business. I think weather in general is probably the most overused and misunderstood of those things in your risk management toolbox. And by misunderstood, I mean a lot of folks aren't doing it right. Let's be real honest with you. If you think that long-range forecasting is something that is basically voodoo or something that cannot help you, you're misunderstanding the weather. So for those of you that may still have that misconception, no disrespect, my goal is to show you some things that might change your mind a little bit today. How many of you folks have seen me speak before? These. A few? Okay. We got a good amount that haven't, which is awesome. We'll allow some time for questions here at the end and whatnot. I'll stay pretty much on task, but I throw a lot at you. So at the end, I'll give you my contact information or some things that you don't understand or maybe have questions about. Please put that to use. And I'll definitely get back to you. So the biggest thing that I think a lot of folks want to know is where we're going forward as far as spring moisture. Obviously, we're rounding things out in the winter, but I just wanted to put this up there. A lot of folks show drought monitor and whatnot. I don't like to use the drought monitor a whole lot because I think it tells maybe only part of the story. So I like to use somewhat of a little different method, which I'll show you in a second. But you can see where there's greens and blues here on the map. That's where we're wetter than average. Where we're brown over to red, that's where we've been drier than average. And that's for the past 90 days. So obviously, you know, East Texas has been seeing a pretty good amount of moisture over the past couple of weeks. But they saw some really dry stuff leading up to that. So they're playing a bit of catch-up. Here in the Panhandle and most of West Texas, we're doing okay. There are some spotty areas that are obviously a little bit drier than what you would probably like. But overall, things are in pretty good shape. And that kind of is a tell of what we had to deal with late in the summer and in the fall, where we put a lot of moisture in the ground. And a lot of that moisture is still there, which is obviously a very good thing. But that's what it looks like over the past 90 days or so. If we fast forward here. I'll let Phil fix that. Just let me know when it's good, Phil. A couple of things, though. This map is largely the haves and have-nots. There isn't a whole lot of evenness to who's seeing moisture and who isn't right now. So that's always a little disconcerting in an area that is largely about the haves and have-nots. We'd like to see that moisture spread out just a little bit, but rarely does that ever happen, and that's why I like to use the term average instead of normal, because normal we rarely ever see anyway, whatever normal is. An average is just too much plus not enough and divided by two, and that's a number that we don't get anyway. That's basically it. So this is the short-term drought indicator. Also shows you where it's been wet. You can see obviously out here in the Panhandle, all the way up to the nation's midsection where they've just been, you know, getting hammered now for about the past year and a half, and a little bit of dryness here in the eastern part of Texas. But overall, there's not a whole lot of big nasty problems as far as drought is concerned, especially on a regional basis. If we look at the what's going on with the oceans, which from a long-range perspective, that's usually where I start looking for signals about where we could possibly go forward. And there are two areas that I always bullseye. And I grabbed this image just a couple of days ago. For those of you that don't know ENSO, El Nino Southern Oscillation, we look at that. This is the ENSO regions right here, from the west coast of South America all the way out in the Central Pacific off the northeast coast of Australia. And where you're seeing the reds, that's where the water temperatures are above average. Where you're seeing the blues, that's where they're below. So right now what we've got a lot of warmer than average water here in the North Central Pacific and also out here in some of these ENSO regions that are farther west. And I'll show you why that's significant here in just a second, but these two areas are very instrumental in determining what happens here across most of the United States, especially here largely in the west central part of the United States, because if this warmer than average water pool up here gets closer to the United States, what it does is it builds a big ridge of high pressure like this, and we get underneath that ridge and it doesn't rain. And it doesn't snow. And most of that gets shoved a little bit farther to the east. But something else that's happening, since we have warmer than average water down here, it invigorates a southern branch of the jet stream that kind of comes up something like this. So if this is failing us, we at least have another shot at getting some moisture in here. And I think that's really what's been going on across the eastern half of Texas and points farther east. They've been getting kind of that second shot, and that's been behaving pretty well for them. When we look at sea surface temperature anomalies over the past several weeks, these are the changes that have been taking place. So where you're seeing the yellows and the oranges, that's where those sea surface temperatures have been above average. Where you're seeing the blues, just the opposite. And these are the changes that have been taking place. Here's the west coast of South America. There's Mexico right there. So you can see it was a lot warmer out here in Hawaii and points to the south and southwest. And we've just been kind of messing around with neutral here. Well, this word right here is the word Modoki. That's the Japanese word for the same but different. So when you're talking about El Niños, they're not just one El Niño. There are different types of El Niños, and they behave differently and offer different weather scenarios for us here in the United States. And I have a lot of friends at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I got a lot of friends in the National Weather Service, and I'll be real honest with you. They do a very poor job talking about these differences and how they're applicable to ag producing in general. They do a very poor job in talking about that as far as Department of Transportation, costs, snow removal, so on and so forth. So if we can separate these differences between the two and see how they interact, it basically makes us better long-range forecasters. And that's what we're going for. So that's on the surface right here. So I also have a map that goes beneath the surface. Over here on the left, this is the depth out here in the ocean, okay? From zero all the way down to 450 meters. Over here is off the east coast of Australia. This is off the west coast of South America. So we're going across the Pacific and across section down into the ocean here. Same color scheme here. All of this orange is warmer than average water that's building out here in that region, farther west. Okay, farther east, we've had some changes here. We had a little bit of water that was warmer than average. We've kind of eroded that somewhat. And we're also trying to erode that over here as well. So what this essentially would mean for us right now is neutrality. No tip one way or the other. But if there is going to be a tip, it's called that Modoki El Nino. And I'll show you the differences here in just a second. All of these circles, squares over here, these are different computer models looking at the same thing, whether or not we are in El Nino, La Nina, or neutral conditions or whatever, and where we are going. Over here is October, November, December. Here's September, October, November over here into 20. And basically, most of these lines are kind of right around the zero mark, indicating that neutrality. Some of them take us down here. I'm not too concerned about this stuff just yet. But right up here is kind of where it looks like most of these computer models are suggesting we're going to live over the next several months, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. The JAMSTEC model looks at Modoki Index. It's forecasting whether or not we would see an El Nino Modoki here, and it's up here around 0.5, kind of flirting with stuff a little higher at times, but bottom line kind of shaves that off here as we head toward the back part of this year. And this, to me, indicates that those ocean temperatures aren't going to change a great deal. It takes a lot to change them, especially over a short period of time. It usually takes months to get that accomplished, and I think that's what most of the models are seeing. So for those of you that are not familiar with the different types of El Nino, I'm going to take a second and kind of break that down for you. This is what a traditional El Nino looks like in terms of sea surface temperature anomalies. This is the warmer than average water and where it would live during a traditional El Nino. We'd have cooler than average water up here, a warm pool off the west coast down through Hawaii. This is what a traditional El Nino looks like in terms of sea surface temperatures. This is what a Madoki El Nino looks like. That looks a little bit more like what we've got going on right now. That warmer than average water is shifted a little farther to the west. We've got a little bit of cooling here off the west coast of South America. We've got warmer than average water here through a large part of the North Pacific. So, traditional Madoki. You think shifting those that warmer than average water around a big ocean like the Pacific is going to have some weather impacts? Yeah, just a smidge. This is what they look like in terms of precipitation differences. And again, this isn't a perfect road map, but it's an idea, and it's a pretty good one. But with a traditional El Nino, we usually light things up here with wetter than average conditions through a large part of the west, even down here through Texas, southeast Colorado, southwest Kansas, the Dust Bowl area here. Madoki, though, shuts that door. It shuts that door into California largely, and that hurts us a little bit here across New Mexico and west Texas and eastern Colorado. And at least in Colorado, we went gangbusters in the fall with snow. But we've got 8 days left here in January. And if we don't see any moisture measured in Denver in those 8 days, it'll be the driest January on record in Denver. Everybody's freaking out. And I'm like, just shut up. January and February are our driest months in and along the east of the mountains. Even when it snows, that snow doesn't have any moisture in it. So I don't know why people are complaining, but it's like it's the end of the world up there. Now, if we do that same thing in March and April, then there's something to complain about. Well, we got a little bit of time yet. But that's a product of what's going on with those sea surface temperatures out there right now. And it's pretty telling who's been seeing the moisture, you know? East Texas and points to the east and to the northeast. So I think it's kind of spot on with what we're seeing right now. I'm going to show you some computer models and then I'm going to discuss them a little bit here. I'm going to show you three different ones. This first one I'm going to show you is the NMME. It's the North American Multi-Model Ensemble. Okay, it's a 10-model suite, and basically what it's doing is it's looking at precipitation. I could show you temperature. I think a lot of the models are greatly biased in terms of temperature right now toward a warmer than average type thing when it's not necessarily all warmer than average, so I'm going to leave that for another time. But in terms of precipitation, this is what this model is forecasting for February. It's got drier than average conditions out here. Remember I showed you that warmer than average pool out here where that ridge would form. And then east of that ridge, kind of the trend is your friend, really. Who's staying wet? The same areas that have been wet over the past few months here. So that's what February looks like. Let's go to March. Same type of pattern. Worries in California. We've got good stuff going on here. Oklahoma and northeastward. Most of Texas is in white, which basically means average. Okay, no tip one way or the other. And then we dry things out a little bit here along parts of the Gulf Coast. But nothing big in terribly nasty in terms of, you know, drier than average over an area that would be a problem for us. We go to April, there's a little drier signal going on right here across the Central Plains. And I usually look in these months of March and April, and if California, if the door is shut right there, that bothers me somewhat. Because our big wet storms that we get will usually come through California. Rarely do they ever come down from the north. So if California is drier than average, usually the states immediately to the east and downstream of them a lot of times will be drier than average, and I think that's what the model is trying to pick up here. In May, nothing to write home about here for West Texas except maybe average to maybe slightly above average right there. In May, we start talking more about thunderstorms instead of big storms coming in from the west, but nothing crazy going on there that's a problem. And then as we head toward June and July, this particular model suggests that there would be some problems here across Texas and going westward. July, the same story. Well, for a large part of Texas, July is drier than, you know, is dry. It's hot and dry in Texas in July. Up here over southeast Colorado, the panhandles in northeast New Mexico, that starts the monsoon season. So if that fails, that's a problem there. But if we have good moisture ahead of that, going into those months, maybe we can weather that just a little bit. And again, this is a model, just that, it's a model. It's not set in stone. This is one of my, this is the U.S. model, if you will. This is what the United States government uses most of the time when we're talking about long-range stuff. Is it my favorite? No. Because I think our government our government sucks when it comes to computer modeling, is what I'm trying to say. Okay? They do. The Europeans are far more skilled. They put more money into their product. They update their product. And we're just kind of running around in the dark right now. To give you an example of that, current administration and past administrations for the past two have been wanting to make weather cuts. And what do you mean by a weather cut? Well, there's a National Weather Service office here in Lubbock, and they release two balloon launches every day to sample the atmosphere. Current and past administration have wanted to cut that down to one balloon launch. So wrap your mind around this, if you will. The large perception about weather forecasts is that they suck. If you take one of those balloon launches away, sampling the atmosphere, they're going to really suck. I'm not sure why they want to do something like that. I'm sure government, in its infinite wisdom, has some other place that they could trim a little bit of fat. Maybe I'm wrong. But that's been talked about, and that would be a huge problem. You want to see weather forecasts get really bad? You do that. It would send us back to the dark ages in terms of weather forecasting, modeling, and so on and so forth, because those computer models rely on that atmospheric data to initialize upon. And if they don't get that initialization, anything that happens thereafter is going to be greatly skewed or interpreted wildly differently than it should. So hopefully that doesn't come to fruition in my lifetime, or at least while I'm in a weather forecasting capacity, because it'd be a big problem. But that takes us through July in this model. Actually, we can go through August. And again, you go out in time, your forecast is likely going to be less accurate. That's just simple statistics. The future is hard sometimes. Here's the Jamstack model. This is out of Japan. And same color scheme. The browns and the reds drier than average. Green is wetter than average. This is March, April, May. A little bit of dryness that shows up with this model here across central and northeast Texas. And again, I think these patchy areas of dryness here in the western U.S. are largely because this model sees the storm track in California being a problem. And by being a problem, I mean that it isn't there. So who stays wet? The same places that have been wet, at least with this model. If we go to June, July, August, again, it has some of that dryness that the previous model was talking about here across central Texas, but again, most of the panhandle favoring the white. And here's the one thing with model. I would say if these neighboring areas are here are dry, why would it be just so dry right here in eastern New Mexico and immediately across into west Texas and it gets wetter than average or average? That's something that the model just isn't seeing. So if it's dry right next door, chances are you're going to be drier than average too, is at least my experience. But the signal isn't powerful. It's just there, okay? And then we go to September, October, November. No huge problems here, or really anywhere for that matter. And I think that's also pretty telling. Because we don't have any massive areas of drought right now that are in place or next door to us, even though I know it's drier, you go into central parts of Texas, it's drier than it is here. There's nothing feeding that at this point, and that's a good thing. This last model I'm going to show you is the Euro model. It's Euro seasonal model. It's the one that I like the most. And it has some things in here that the other models have been showing too. But for February, still wetter than average here across southeast Texas. Average to slightly wetter than average here. No huge signal. But look who's still dry up here. Eastern Colorado, most of California, Pacific Northwest, indicating that that Madoki-like feature is still present and still influencing our weather pattern, even though it's not very well recognized by some other forecasters. It's something that I continue to look at. March, again, California seems to have storm track problems over here. We've got drier than average stuff coming out of southeast Arizona, New Mexico, West Texas. Again, nothing crazy, but still a tip toward drier than average. And then you go over here with areas that have been wet, and they stay wet. So a lot of times in long-range forecasting, the trend is your friend. And that's essentially kind of where the model is looking at, too, and going. We go to April. Same story. Wet east. Somewhat drier than average out here west. And I think it stands to good reason that as long as California is having issues, we will not be wetter than average here. I think that makes sense. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have a big, nasty regional drought develop, but it probably means you're not going to have as much moisture as you would like. So, glad you got a wet fall? Yeah. Got a little bit of subsoil moisture to build on and put to use and tap into that during some times where it might be a little drier than average. And then we go into May, and it lights up most of West Texas and all of Central Texas as far as wetter than average goes, and largely up here in the nation's midsection. There's June. And July, which again, July in Central and South Texas is not kind moisture-wise most years. But there's a hint of monsoon taking place here in July from Mexico up through New Mexico and into southwest Colorado, and a lot of times that moisture will bleed eastward across eastern New Mexico and clip the panhandle as well. Okay? So kind of my thoughts here. This whole El Nino thing, if it's even recognized, it's going to stay neutral or keep this weak Madoki-like thing going on. I don't see any huge changes taking place, at least in the short term. Okay? Drought's not an issue for now. Those models aren't exactly wet for spring, and it may take a while to activate the pattern farther west. And by farther west, I mean West Texas, New Mexico, and points farther west. It may take a little bit of time to do that. I do have some cautious optimism for some late spring moisture, though. And by late spring, I'm talking, you know, as we head into May. Maybe late April and into May. I am a little bit concerned about some La Nina potential as we head maybe into 2021. And I want to talk a little bit about that because while we've been messing around here with the Pacific not necessarily being in one phase or another, we really haven't had any big problems with drought lately that have sustained themselves. And that's largely because we haven't had a major La Nina episode. So for those of you that may not know, El Nino has the Pacific warmer than average. La Nina has it cooler than average. La Nina will do things like what happened back from late 10, 11, 12, parts of 13. Okay? Depending on the episode type. Okay? That's something that is, that's really in the grand scheme of things when I'm looking at long-range forecasting and drought forecasting. When I see La Nina develop, that's when I really start raising the alarm bells that you need to be prepared for something like that. So what I've advised a lot of my clients to do, whether they live in eastern Colorado or western Kansas or Oklahoma or Texas or New Mexico or whatever, is be prepared for that. Because while we haven't had a significant La Nina episode since then, we've had a couple little ones that we've been able to weather okay, that would be something that would be a big agricultural problem, is when you get a three-year drought going on. And I've talked to a lot of folks that deal with water up along the Front Range in Colorado, and they are not prepared at all. All they want to do is build. So when you start talking about drought, well, drought's bad for business. Yes. So at least be prepared and use this stuff these times of maybe not necessarily bountiful times for everybody in terms of moisture, but if you've got a good subsoil plot going on, maybe use that to your advantage and down the road be prepared for something like this in terms of conservation, maybe not necessarily irrigation or just simply with grazing practices, because it will happen. It's not a matter of, you know, if, it's when. We all know that. We've lived here long enough. That's my contact information right there. Email me, you can tweet me, whatever. We do some pretty good things at weather5280.com. A lot of that is based in Colorado, but we also do stuff for Texas and the Central Plains as well. And if you want a personal quote on that, hit me up, okay? I forecast weather for parts of Southeast Texas. I've got clients there. I've got clients in Montana, whatever. And then, you know, we can kind of go from there. But I will say this, and I've been preparing my family for it in eastern Colorado, is there are some signatures within history when you look back in terms of what we are doing in terms of solar activity right now, in terms of what we are doing with the oceans and whatnot. And to be honest, we don't really understand that stuff that happened a long time ago. And you may say, well, what do you mean by stuff? I'm talking about drought that drove out civilizations. That's kind of what I'm talking about. Now, obviously, we don't live back in the 1600s or the 1800s. And our technology and our conservation and our awareness is infinitely better than it was back then. All right? But it still doesn't diminish the fact of what those 3 years did from late 10, 11, 12, and in a part of 13, even with today's technology, awareness, whatever, that hurt. And it ruined a lot of generational ranches, at least up in my neck of the woods, it sure did. And then you had a lot of people talk about, well, when's it going to come back? It's never going to come back. Well, that's the one thing that a lot of people don't understand either. This country is pretty resilient in terms of what comes back. You may have a shitload of weeds to deal with when it comes back, but it comes back. There was talk about grass seeding, everything like that. When our drought broke at my family ranch, we had 7 inches of rain in 36 hours. Well, what do you think the High Plains uses in terms of soil during that time? There was not a puddle in the driveway after that. It just all went down and everything started to regenerate. It took some time, but it happened. So in a time where a lot of people's memories are only longer than about 15 minutes, or no longer than 15 minutes, if you do some digging back through history, you will see some of these things that I'm talking about. And a lot of these things I'm not afraid to share because in my line of work, whether it be talking with consultants or producers or just on TV, this whole normalcy bias is a real problem too. And to drive that home, it's like, well, we had a shooting in the neighborhood last night. Well, that didn't happen. What's the first thing people say when you get on TV about that? I was really surprised that shooting happened in our neighborhood. Well, why is that? Well, maybe because it's never happened in your neighborhood before. But just because it hasn't happened in your neighborhood before doesn't mean that it isn't going to happen. Okay? A lot of people can't get past that. Same thing can be said with weather, long-range forecasting, drought, or whatever. Just because you can't remember it or haven't seen it doesn't mean that it isn't going to happen. So that's what I'm talking about in terms of preparedness. You should always be getting prepared for what comes next in terms of agriculture. And I know you guys are smart enough to do that. Okay? Anybody have any questions for me? Well, I was either that good or I was that bad. Well, if you do have any questions, put my email or my Twitter handle to use. And I will definitely be getting back to you. Whether it's Phil or Rick or Cam, it's always a pleasure to come down here with you guys. And I greatly appreciate you having me back. And it'd be a pleasure for me to come back next year as well. So thanks for having me today, guys.